So tonight, we're looking at what I would say is probably one of the most astounding statements ever made by a human being. I think in the whole of the Bible, this stands out as quite an outstanding verse, if you would pick any verse from the Bible. We're looking, obviously, you can choose it from the passage. It's where we finished our reading, verse 21. We sung it just in the last hymn as well. Let's read it again. This is what it says. For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Now, I don't know what side of that is more shocking, the first half of that or the second half. To live is Christ, to die is gain. Which one's more shocking? Which one's more hard to take in? But just know, it's written by the Apostle Paul, a real man in real history, and it reads like a motto. I'm sure you all know what a motto is. A short sentence or a phrase that encapsulates something. So we use mottos a lot today still. So we've got Nike, just do it. L'Oreal, because you're worth it. I was waiting for someone to finish it for me there. Boy Scouts, be prepared. My personal favourite is Spurs, obviously, Tottenham Hotspur. To dare is to do. They don't stick to that, obviously, which is quite a shame, but that's their motto. So it encapsulates them. When you think of just do it, it's supposed to capture something of what Nike's all about. And it's kind of like this with this motto for the Apostle Paul. It captured his life. For me to live, dot, dot, dot. This is what my life is all about. And this is what death is to me too. So life and death. Death is this. Life is this. And it's good for us to consider this motto tonight because I think it brings to us the most important questions you could ever ask in your life. This motto is confronting us with questions such as, what is your life all about? What are you living for? Why are you here? Do you know, I first asked that question when I was in reception class. I remember sitting on a wall with my best friend, and I just said, why are we here? I was a deep thinker. I was a smart kid. But that question left me as I got older. I stopped thinking. But this motto confronts us with that kind of question. What are you here for? What are you living for? And then it also brings death in as well in the second half. What's death to you? It caused you to face death. What would that be to you when that comes? So I hope by the end of this message, this sermon, I hope the great desire in all of us would be to say something like Paul here, that somehow his motto would be mine and I would desire that and want that, that I would be able to say, for me, to live is Christ, to die is gain. So let's look at this motto. And the first question I want to ask is an obvious one. What exactly is Paul saying here? What does he mean? There's obviously two parts to it. So let's just look at the first bit. To live is Christ. What does that actually mean? I think to help us understand, there's many routes we could go to try and explain this. It's probably many things, but I think its essence is, imagine if I stood here and said, for me to live is Spurs. I know I keep mentioning Spurs a lot, but just imagine it. Imagine if I stood here with a serious face and said, for me to live is Spurs. What do you think I would mean by that? I would be saying that the thing that makes life worth living for me is Spurs. Don't laugh. But that's what I would be saying. It's what gets me up in the morning, Spurs. It's what I want to watch, hear about, represent. I want to promote them. It's the cause I'm living for. Thankfully, it's not the real answer for me, but I'd be a very miserable person if that was the case. But fill it with any blank that you like. For me to live is dot, dot, dot. The meaning starts to become clear. It's not just saying I love this. It's saying this is my very life. If it wasn't for this, my life would not be worth living. And that's what Paul is saying about Christ. Just consider that for a minute. The man Jesus who lived 2,000 years ago on the other side of the world, Paul is saying, he's my life. My life would not be worth living without Christ. So that's the first bit. But then we've got the second part. I don't know what's more shocking here. To die is gain. Think about what we're talking about there. Death. Death. The thing that takes away everything I've ever lived for. The thing that separates loved ones that spent all their life together. Death. The thing that causes such fear and tears Do you think the most tears that have been cried have been because of death? I think so. The thing that everyone spends their lives trying to avoid, to running away from, taking supplements, watching doctors on YouTube. What do I take? How do I avoid this thing? Paul says, yeah, that thing, death, is gain, benefit. It's a benefit. It will be a benefit to me. It's essentially what he's saying. In fact, he goes as far to say in verse 23, I desire to depart. Do you know that word desire is a very strong word? I long for it. I long to depart. That's what Paul is saying about death. And by the way, this was real for Paul. This wasn't hypothetical. Because sometimes when we think about death, it seems so far away, it's quite easy to say, yeah, I don't mind dying. But for Paul, he was imprisoned at this moment on trial, facing death. So it was very real for him to talk about death. He was about to face a trial before Caesar as he was writing this letter. So for Paul, this was very real. And the big question is obviously, how could that ever be gain, Paul? How could death ever be a gain to you? And he goes on to give the answer in verse 23 in Philippians 1. He goes, he says, my desire is to depart and be with Christ, for that is far better. So he's essentially saying, death is not the end for me. I'm just departing. I'm going to be with Christ. So if you add up the two, right, because he spoke about heaven there, but his heaven is Christ. He didn't say, I'm going to go to be to heaven. I'm going to go to be in heaven. He says, I'm going to go to be with Christ. So if you add up both sides, Paul is saying, why I live, Christ. Why I can face death, Christ. Christ is everywhere in this motto. It's all centered on Christ. Okay, you're starting to get it. But let's try and go a bit deeper. Because as you look at the surrounding verses in this letter, it pops up everywhere what Paul's saying. Just so you can really understand how big this is, what he's saying. Let's just read some verses surrounding this, just so you can really get a sense of, wow, Paul really means this. So let's just read, let's say, verse 12. Let's go back a bit. Listen to what Paul says in verse 12. This is if you've got the Bible open. Feel free to listen if you don't. He says, I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel, so that it has become known throughout the whole Imperial Guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. So essentially, what he's saying there is, yes, I am imprisoned. I'm in chains right now. I'm not free. I'm heading for death. But I'm just glad that Christ is being preached. I'm just glad that my imprisonment is advancing the cause of Christ. Are you getting a sense of that? To live is Christ. I don't care if I'm imprisoned as long as Christ is going forward. So that's the first little clue. Then we get to, say, verse 15. Let's carry on. Verse 15, some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. Then verse 18, what then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or truth, Christ is proclaimed. And in that I rejoice. So what he's saying there essentially is, people are trying to take down my name by preaching Christ. They want to ruin my reputation here in prison. And he says, I don't care as long as Christ is preached. I don't care about me, he's saying. There's no Paul here. His reputation doesn't matter to him anymore. So that gives you a sense of what he means to live as Christ. It's not about me. It really isn't. And that's shocking for us because everything we do in this life, I think, is really about me. But anyway, let's carry on. Verse 20. Let's just take that in for a minute. Verse 20. He's talking about his up-and-coming trial, and he's imprisoned at the moment, and he says, verse 20, as it is my eager expectation and hope that I will not be at all ashamed, but that with full courage, now as always, Christ will be honoured in my body, whether by life or by death. Do you get what you're saying there? Christ, as long as Christ gets the honour from my life, I don't care if I live or die, basically. I really don't care, as long as Christ gets the honour. This is quite full-on stuff, isn't it? Even as Christians, do I think like this? Okay, verse 23. We could keep going through loads, but I just want to give you two more just to give you an idea. He's talking about life and death. Oh, which one? Which one? I'm hard-pressed between the two. My desire is to depart and be with Christ, for that is far better. Do you know what he's saying in that verse? Christ is far better than anything I could ever experience in this life. Whatever the riches are that I get, whatever experiences I enjoy, whatever countries I visit, whatever love I experience, etc. Just add it all up here. I just want to depart and be with Christ because he's far better than all those things. This is full on. It's trying to flesh it out. I hope you're getting a sense of it. But then I think one of the strongest is in chapter 3. And let's just turn there very quickly, if you can, if you've got the Bible open. This really does kind of drive it home. Verse 7. He lists, in chapter 3, he's listed all his pedigree, his everything that he used to be proud of. I was a Hebrew, I was this, I was that. Then he says, verse 7, but whatever gain I had, I counted as loss for the sake of Christ. Indeed, I count everything as loss for the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord. For his sake, I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish in order that I may gain Christ. Do you know what that word rubbish can be translated as there? Dung. I won't go into any other words for that in the English language. But he's basically saying everything is worthless, and not even just that, offensive, because that's what it is. It's offensive compared to knowing Christ. If I was to try and compare the two, it would be like dung. This is strong stuff. We're dealing with a man who seems to be Christ-obsessed. Everything has paled into significance. Do you feel this? And we must pause for a minute. I think how unusual this is to our ears today in our culture. It's not unusual to live for something. So many people are saying to live is dot, dot, dot. We were joking earlier about living for Spurs. There are many people that actually do that. I know people that their life is Spurs. What a life. You're up sometimes, down most of the time. So that's one example, quite a funny example. But then there's good examples, isn't there? Respectable examples. Family, to live is family. To live is my wife or husband. To live is my children. To live is, you know, this is obvious, isn't it? I think the shocking thing here is that Paul is so in with Christ. With Christ. The person that people use as a swear word today. People treat as kind of like a nothing. He's like that with Christ. That's the first shock. But then it's the second bit, isn't it? To die, to die. We wouldn't put death in our motto. Death is the unmentionable. Don't talk about death, Paul. We try and avoid that. But even when we're thinking about death, let's imagine you were forced to consider death tonight. Imagine the nicest death you could ever have. I don't know. Peaceful in your sleep, you didn't even know it happened. Or your family sitting by your bed, you're holding hands. You could never say that was gain. I don't think anyone in their right mind would say that that was a gain. It's always the worst case. It's always the worst nightmare. It's always the worst fear. At best, you might say, if you were particularly brave, I'll bear it, but never gain. You'd never say it was a gain. And even when it seems that people have wanted to die, so let's not get away from this fact. Many people have wanted to die in this life. There's assisted suicide. That's very topical at the moment. There is people taking their own lives today, which is such a sad thing. This isn't that. This isn't Paul saying, life is so bad, I just want to end it. He's not saying that at all. He's saying death is gain, not because of this life ending. I'm happy to stay here, he says. I'll serve Christ. I'm happy to stay here. But why it's such a gain is where I'm going to go. What begins at death? Do you see the point? So this is so unusual. For someone to be talking with such certainty about beyond, most religious people in this world, if you ask them, where are you going beyond? They'll say, oh, I hope. Paul's like, no, death is gain. I'm going with Christ. And that's far. So do you see, I'm trying to, I suppose in this first point, I'm trying to get across the shock of what Paul is saying. I think the biggest shock of all is we're reading about someone who seems to have lost his drive to live for self. That's the sense I get when I read Paul. It's not about him anymore. You probably picked it up in the verses. He's so taken up with Christ, his own reputation doesn't matter. It's all about him. And it's all about others because he wants to serve Christ. I want to serve you guys. So we're witnessing someone who somehow has stopped living for themselves. We can't imagine that, I don't think, because self is so underneath everything we do, isn't it? I think whatever your answer is for to live is dot, 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 I think underneath there's always self. That's why you've chosen that, because it pleases you. So this is a shocking statement. I hope I've got that across. But what's even more shocking is the man who says it. Do you know the man who's writing this used to go by the name of Saul? A man who wanted anything but Christ. A man who actually hated Christ with such a passion that he was persecuting his followers wherever he could find them. That's who says this. It raises the stakes, doesn't it? It makes you ask a second question. So we've dealt with the first one. What does Paul mean here? The second question is, what happened to Paul? How did this become his motto? Why is he talking about this? Why is he talking about Christ like this? For that, if you would like to turn with me, we need to turn to Acts 9. If you can, feel free to listen if you're just happy to sit and listen. Something happened to Paul that led him to speak in such a way. Let's just read of this account. So, Acts 9, you'll find it on page 917 if you've got the church Bibles. What we're reading here is the old man, the old Saul. The old Paul, I should say. What we read there, verse 1. But Saul, still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogues at Damascus, so that if he found any belonging to the way, men or women, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem. So do you get the picture there? Paul is pictured like a murderous monster, breathing threats and murder, verse 1. And he's not just happy to attack Christians in Jerusalem, he's on missions to do this work. He's going to Damascus. So he's so filled with rage. He's on a foreign trip, you could say, to destroy Christians. And verse 3, look at what happens to him. Verse 3, now as he went on his way, he approached Damascus, and suddenly a light from heaven shone around him. So just imagine, do you know he will go on to describe this light as brighter than the sun? Is there such thing in the created order? No. But this is divine, this light, shining. He falls to the ground. He's blinded. And the shocking thing about this is it's a person standing in front of him. It's not some random light, because there's a voice that suddenly starts talking in verse 4. And the voice, the person who's standing in front of him knows his name. Do you see it there? And falling to the ground, he heard a voice saying to him, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? Who could this be? Verse 5, Saul said to him, who are you, Lord? So Saul knows whoever this is has to be the Lord. It has to be divine. This is no ordinary man. And listen to the answer. I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. I don't think there was any more shock in human history than that moment. Just imagine, Saul is there, the religious man that he was, thinking he was serving God, and he realized, I have been attacking the Son of God. Can you imagine what dawned on him in those moments? No wonder he calls himself the chief of sinners later on. So we're witnessing this moment where Saul, the chief attacker of Jesus, is now face to face with Jesus, and you're thinking, holy God, chief of sinners, one outcome, destroy him, get rid of this terrible excuse of a human being. But what happens? Verse 6, I am Jesus whom you are persecuting, but rise. I'm not going to end you, Saul. Rise, you're going to have a new beginning. Enter the city and you'll be told what you are to do. I want you to serve me, Paul. I forgive you completely. I've got work for you to do. You're going to spread my name. In fact, later on, we find out, verse 17, Jesus sends to him a man called Ananias. Do you know what Ananias means? God is gracious. God has been kind to you, Saul. He gets his sight back because he was blinded. He's filled with the Spirit. He has work to do. He's filled with the love of God. He's filled with the God himself that he was against his whole life. Can you imagine what that was like for Paul? To experience such love. In one day, he's met God in person. He's realized he's the worst sinner that's ever lived. And yet he's also realized that he's been more deeply loved than he's ever realized in his life at his very worst. All those things happened to him in one day. And I don't think he ever got over it. I think his heart melted from that day and he thought, this is what I'm here for. There's no one like this. No one has loved me like this. You see it all over his writings. When you read about Paul's writings, these verses pop up like he says, God shows his love for us and that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. He says elsewhere, the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. He says elsewhere in the New Testament, Christ Jesus came into the world to save sinners of whom I am foremost. It's like he never got over it. Who has loved me? How can he love me like this? God, and I did this? Do you see? What I'm trying to get across to you right now is with that in mind, I think the motto makes perfect sense. Now it makes sense. I think you can go as far to say the motto is logical. Of course. What else is Paul going to live for? He's just met the God who has loved him at his very worst. What's he going to go off and live for? Of course, to live is Christ. And of course, to die is gain. He's just met the risen Jesus who died on the cross for him while he was at the very worst of sinners. And Jesus rose from the dead so that he can live forever. Of course, death is gain. I know I'm going to be with him. He died for me. He took my sins away. So I suppose the point I'm making is this motto makes sense when you realize the Christ that he's talking about. And you realize what Christ did for him, and he's found it. What else would he live for? Maybe you say, that's just Paul, though. He's a bit fanatic, you know, Paul. He's a bit all out, isn't he? That's not every Christian's experience. He had a Damascus Road experience. I've just been saved in a Christian home. But Paul says in chapter 3 of this letter, join in imitating me. He's basically saying, come and live the life that I'm living. This same reality is for you, whoever you are. And let me just give you some examples of Christians in history that have said similar things. Listen to this. I don't often bring books into the pulpit. Don't worry, these aren't my sermon notes. But let me just read to you something from a preacher called Spurgeon, for those of you who don't know who he is, a famous preacher. Tell me if you think this sounds like the motto that we've just been considering tonight. Listen to the love for Christ oozing out of this. This is from Spurgeon's autobiography. I bear witness that never a servant had such a master as I have. Never a brother had such a kinsman as he has been to me. Never spouse had such a husband as Christ has been to my soul. Never sinner a better savior. Never soldier a better captain. Never mourner a better comforter than Christ has been to my spirit. I want none beside him in life. He is my life. And in death, he shall be the death of death. In poverty, Christ is my riches. In sickness, he makes my bed. In darkness, he is my star. And in brightness, he is my sun. If there were no hereafter, I would still prefer to be a Christian. I'll stop there. There's more. That sounds like the motto, doesn't it? And that's Spurgeon, who lived many years after Paul. I could give you countless. Think of the martyrs that have died over history. They proclaim the same motto, to die is gain. They literally are. Think of Frieda, the oldest member of APC. What does she keep saying? I can't wait to die. I'm using her exact words. She wouldn't put it like that. She wants to die so she can go and be with Christ. She's proclaiming this motto. Frieda, think of every time someone has said no to sin for the sake of Christ. They have said, this motto is mine, to live is Christ. Think of every time someone has been mocked for Jesus at school or work. They are proclaiming this motto. Think of every time someone has stepped out in baptism, publicly proclaiming that I am with Jesus. They are saying to live is Christ, to die is gain. Think of every time that someone has said no to some form of advancement in this world, maybe promotion or whatever it is, so they can give themselves more to the cause of Christ. I suppose what I'm trying to say is that countless Christians over history can say the same thing. For me, to live is Christ. What we're looking at tonight, I could go into David in the Old Testament, what we read at the beginning. I could read Asaph. Whom have I in heaven but you? And there is nothing on earth that I desire besides you, Lord. That sounds like the motto, doesn't it? It's everywhere. What we're looking at tonight, I suppose the point I'm getting across here is, we're looking at the heartbeat of Christianity tonight. We are looking at what Christianity is all about in 9 words. For me, well, a bit more than 9 words, but I'm going to say 9 words. To live is Christ, to die is gain. If I was to read the whole verse, it would be a bit longer. To live is Christ, to die is gain. 9 words, and you can condense it into one, really. Christ. The reason I live, Christ. The reason I can die, Christ. And I'm just emphasizing this because have you missed this? You come to church. You learn the gospel. You know the way of salvation. You know what it is to be forgiven, maybe. Great. But have you missed that it's about one central thing? The person, Jesus Christ. I emphasize that because we can easily miss it. Maybe that's why there's been no change in your life. No willing sacrifice. No joy. Because there's been no Christ, really. The person. I remember speaking at a youth talk, a youth group, and I was excited to get to the cross and forgiveness, salvation in because of the cross. And I was just kind of getting through the first bit, which was the vision that Isaiah saw I'm sure a lot of you know about, the throne and the seraphim worshiping him. And I was waiting to get to forgiveness, though. He's God, but he forgives. And one young person left that talk, not so much about the end bit, the first bit. They left saying, if that's who Christ is, what am I doing living for other things? And I think that's the heartbeat of Christianity. Yes, he died on the cross. That is absolutely central. But he died on the cross. The cross is not some magical symbol. It's the person. He did it. He's my life. When I speak to Jehovah's Witnesses, I used to argue with them, and my way of argument was, we believe in salvation by grace, and you believe in salvation by works. That was the wrong route. I should have went straight for the jugular. You don't know Christ. That's your problem. If you knew Christ, you would know his forgiveness and everything else. The point I'm making is, Christianity, in one word, is Christ. And Jesus himself says tonight, come and find it. It's available to everyone. He says, you can have me. This can be yours. This can be your reality, he says. Whoever you are tonight, I've given myself for you. Life is in me, he says. You will only find true life and satisfaction in me. I've died so you can find it. I've taken all those sins away on the cross, and I've risen so that death may truly be a gain to you. You don't have to fear death anymore. And he says, whoever you are, I've done it. Come to me. It's available to everyone in this room. You can find true purpose. You can find a meaning to life that you never thought was possible. You can be free from the emptiness of living for things in this world that were never meant to take the center of your life. You can be free from the tyranny of living for self and pleasing others. And you can live a life where you can say, whatever happens, like we sung, it is well with my soul. If I lose all my riches, if I lose my health, if I lose this, if I'm on my deathbed, it is well with my soul because I have Christ. That is what is on offer for everyone here. This isn't a call to come to Christianity. This isn't a call to join a church club or understand more of the Bible. This is a call to come to the person Jesus Christ who is risen and stands here tonight. So the final question tonight is this. What is your motto in life? We've all got one. Paul says, for me to live, what do you say is for you to live? No matter who it is tonight, you've got something. Maybe if you don't know what it is, what's the thing you think most about? What's the thing you worry most about? What's the thing you sacrifice most for and spend most time in? And what's the thing you go to when you're sad? That might help you figure it out. But there's something you're living for. There's something you've based your existence on. And I love this question, what are you living for? Because it gets right to the heart of things. This question is not asking, do you go to church or preach or evangelize or are you living a holy life? This question is asking, what are you living for? Is it Christ, the person? Does it show in your life like Paul? Or is it like the Spurs motto, where you've got it as your motto, but it's not showing in your life at all? And what about that second part, to die? What is it to die for you? Could it ever be gain for you? Really think about it, because we never believe in our own death, we're told, and it's true. Imagine that last moment of your life, that last breath. Could you ever say that moment would be a gain to you? I'll go as far to say this. If you cannot say to live is Christ, you won't be able to say death is gain, that's for sure. The point tonight is this. We're all searching for something worthy. Something worthy of my life. Something worthy to give myself to. And the great tragedy with idolatry, which is basically living for something else other than God, is we give our lives to something that isn't worthy. I'm basing my existence on something that isn't worth basing my existence on. So tell me tonight, is that thing you're living for worthy of your life? Is it worth basing your existence on? Can it make death a gain to you? Can it do that for you? Tell me tonight, what can compare with Christ? We are talking about the Son of God, the image of the invisible God, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the fairest of 10,000, the way, the truth, and the life. Maybe let's make it personal. If you're let down tonight in life, he never leaves nor forsakes. If you're lonely tonight and no one seems to care, he's the friend who sticks closer than a brother. If you're stuck tonight in things you can't break free from, he's the almighty God who will pull you out of anything. If you're empty tonight, he's the bread of life for your hungry soul. If you're guilty tonight, he's the Lamb of God who takes the sin of the world. Are you foolish and you're not making good decisions in life? He's the wonderful counselor. Are you lost? He's the good shepherd who leads all the way home to heaven. Are you cynical? He's the holy, holy, holy one who's not like the people you've met in this world. He's 100% pure and fully trustworthy. Are you afraid of death? He's the risen one who makes death a gain for you. Are you anxious? He's the Prince of Peace. Are you in darkness? He's the light of the world. Are you bored? He's the glorious one where if you were to meet him face to face, you would fall down utterly overwhelmed, trembling, because you've never met anyone like this. I'm trying to convince you, because before you will ever say to live is Christ, you're going to have to deal with that thing that is currently in his place and take it away, even if it's my very self. So won't you settle it in your mind tonight? There's one worth living for. There's one who will last forever. Won't you count all as rubbish and find him? Young people, there's some young people here. Can I speak to you directly? You've got your whole life ahead. I'm looking at some. You've got your whole life ahead. Can I spare you the trouble of living for things that are not worth it for you? There's a quote from C.T. Studd, and it says this. There's only one life. It will soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last. Young people, make a decision. Live for one person. He will never let you down. Older people here, your life has gone almost. But it's not too late, because death is gain. So even if someone was to come to Christ on their last breath, their life would just be beginning. So it doesn't matter how old you are tonight and how much life you have left. Christians, won't you resolve again that to live is Christ? Won't you clear the clutter? Sometimes I picture our lives, Christian lives, as like a mobile phone that is so packed with apps and photos and annoying messages popping up everywhere. and you just want to give it a factory reset. Do we need something of that in our Christian lives? A reset to the beginning. Clear all the clutter, even the good stuff, and just get back to the core, Christ himself. For everyone here, this is important. If there is someone here who has never known to live as Christ and to die as gain, you've never known this, you've never known Christ, it's not real for you, can I urge you to decide for the first time tonight to live as Christ? I'm going to leave everything behind, no more living for self or others, whatever it is, I'm going to come to him and I'm going to believe in what he's done and I'm going to pray, Lord, forgive me, make me new, and resolve it tonight. I'm going to take not one more step in my life until I know you've answered me. I'm not going to leave this church building until I know you have heard and answered me. I cannot take another step. Won't you do that tonight? This is too big. This is life and death and beyond. There's a heaven and there's a hell. Resolve to live as Christ, to die as gain. For everyone here tonight, if you can truly say to live as Christ, yes, it will be hard. It is hard to follow Christ. Paul was in prison here. But it's the one life worth living. And if to live is Christ, if you can say that, then even death itself will only be gained.